If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
It's hard to sell an investor on, I don't know when this is going to play out. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get a permit. The city says I can't, but just trust me on it. I'm sure it's going to work out fine.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Preston founded and oversees Walls Property Group and Walls Property Management. The companies are vertically integrated, offering construction management, property management, maintenance, and syndications. Preston is currently building a 61-unit mid-rise multifamily project in permit for a 53-unit site and renovating several existing value-add multifamily properties in Seattle. Preston, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Man, the pleasure's all mine. I know we forgot to record the first time through this. So here we are. We're going to give this, of course, we only got what, 30 seconds in? And I said, oh, shoot, Preston, I forgot to record this. I'm an idiot. So here we are, round two, take two here on the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on is, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, I started from a family of real estate entrepreneurs. My grandfather was a professor in Seattle, and he had some student housing on the side. And my dad lived in that building, and he became a real estate developer and managed his properties. So from an early age, I grew up going on maintenance calls and construction sites with him, and learned it from him. And after a few years of working on Wall Street, I got burnt out and started working with my dad in 2002. And we built a couple of projects and been doing it since then.
Man, that's awesome. I mean, not everybody gets the opportunity to have multi-generation, you know, real estate investors or developers to learn from. But what did you ever say in high school, or maybe even in college, I'm never going to do real estate?
My dad evolved into real estate. He was an electrical contractor by trade, and that was his primary business. And he kind of acquired real estate on the side. He acquired a lot of central boiler brick buildings and converted them to electric heat. And he did those as supplemental work for his crew. So they always had a cushion of work to do. And eventually he just ended up with enough real estate that became his full-time job. I did say I wanted no part of the electrical contracting business. He was trying to pawn that off on me for a while, but that was not my speed.
Not happening. There's nothing wrong with that. Being a general contractor is harder than people think. That takes a skill set that's unique for sure. So what was your, I guess you said you built a couple projects, you know, once you came back from Wall Street, you guys built a couple projects and you've just been off to the races since then. What were some of those projects?
So we did two mid-rise podium style buildings together. So garage parking, concrete deck, and then wood frame above that. And then he did some renovation of his existing assets. And so I saw that model and saw how it worked, and then started picking up my own projects to do on the side.
Right, right. And so what does business look like for you today? I know you're in the middle of building a 61 unit. And for our listeners, and actually for me even, what is a mid-rise multifamily? I'm not sure I'm familiar with the term.
I would say it's the highest you can build out of wood frame construction. It's what you get before you get into concrete and steel construction. So they're usually like 4 to 6 stories tall with a concrete base, concrete podium, garage parking, yeah, wood frame. But what kind of projects did I do? I mean, I started out really small existing buildings. My first building was a triplex. I turned it into a 4-unit building. I lived in it. I've lived in a number of properties that I've owned over the years. And, you know, my goal has been to buy it, rehab it, refinance, hang on to it, and roll the proceeds into the next one. Just trying to hang on to as many properties for as long as possible.
Right. And that flies kind of counter to what a lot of the common syndicators are doing today, which is, you know, hey, we got a 5 to 8 year plan. We're going to buy it. We're going to raise rents. And then, you know, once we bump the NOI, then we can resell it in 5 to 8 years. But your plan is very different. It sounds like you just want to hold it in perpetuity.
Yes. And the syndications that I've done also follow that model or ideology. And it, you know, it takes finding the right investor that's willing to sign on to kind of an open-ended hold period. But, you know, the advantage is refinance. You can get most of your initial investment back, and then you're just clipping the coupons from there. And as rents grow, that dividend rate, that investment continues to pay off.
Right, right. Yeah, that's really interesting. What was your first development on your own that you went out and did? And why did you choose development versus, I guess, you know, like you said before, you lived in a lot of the houses you had done, or you took a triplex and turned into a quadplex. But when did you transition into, now I'm going to do development? Because I feel like it's a brand new set of skills that maybe just renovating and rehabbing, you know, doesn't really necessarily lay the groundwork for.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that transfer. I mean, I view it, the biggest thing to compartmentalize is risk, right? So where are my best risk-adjusted returns, and what do I need to do to position for that? And the thing that I like about these value-add existing buildings is they're low risk relative to new construction. So this building that I'm working on now, it's been 7 years in the making. Bought the first parcel of land 7 years ago, and construction's mostly done, but it's not stabilized yet, and they don't have permanent financing on it. So the story is not complete on it, but 7 years is a long time to wait it out and have your capital idle and not earning a return. So I view value adds as a way to generate some cash flow quickly. And I do limited development with kind of a finite pool of capital that I can put at risk for a long time.
Right. 7 years is a long time to develop a piece of ground. I guess how much of that time has actually been time under construction, and how much of it has been just getting through red tape?
It was a hairy project to begin with. And that was one of the things that was appealing to me about it. It was sold on a cap rate because there was permanent history of the city that said you cannot build anything on this site due to the slope steepness. Because a previous developer had tried kind of half-heartedly to get a permit and didn't go through the steps. And so I bought it as there's a building there, there's generating cash flow, and I had this zero cost option on a future development. And so that was something that I was willing to take and gamble on. But, you know, the purchase price of all of the land was less than $1 million. And I spent more than $1 million, probably close to $1.25 million just on entitlements and engineering, architects, permit fees. And that was probably 4 years of working through that process. A little over 2 years of construction.
Wow. Wow. That's a tough road to hoe, man. So I guess, was that part of the plan, or is it just that's just the way that one worked out?
That was part of the plan. I mean, anytime you go into a project with that kind of history from the city, you know, you've got an uphill battle. And I did some things that made the project better, but it took some time. I purchased some land from the Washington State Department of Transportation, right? So land that didn't exist yet as parcels. So went through their process, and it was very bureaucratic and took a long time, but eventually got it, enhanced the footprint of the building to make it into a much better project.
Right, right. And so when you get this one built, you've got investors along for the ride with you. You're going to get it built. And this one, just like the others, you're going to hold for as long as it's throwing off a coupon. You're just going to clip it and keep cashing the check.
Well, this one I did not take any investors on because there are too many risks going into it, right? It's hard to sell an investor on, I don't know when this is going to play out. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get a permit. The city says I can't, but just trust me on it. I'm sure it's going to work out fine. I saved those for myself. The investors go on the cookie cutter journeys of, here are the last 20 or 30 value add rehabs I've done, it looks a lot like these, and I'm fairly certain this one's going to look the same.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting you say that. That would be a tough sell or a tough sale. Hey, guys, like you said, all the points you just mentioned, that would be really tough. I mean, unless you just had an investor that knows you really well and wants to gamble, like, all right, hey, you know, we could make some money here. But again, those are harder conversations. I would think that if you're willing to gamble, you're going to do it with your own funds and just call it a day. That's really cool. So let's see here. I guess, you know, as you've gone through this last 20 or so years, are there some things that you could rewind the tape a little bit and say, if I could do it over, I would do this differently?
My big thing is controlling as many variables as possible and focusing on as narrow a set of variables as you can. The times that I've kind of run askew or my least successful investments have strayed from that. One was a geographically well-located. It was on a main street, a couple blocks from my office. So I knew the area really, really well, but it was a fully retail building and my focus is multifamily. Sometimes I'll take on some retail as a ground floor component. It was also a historic building that had two different historic overlays in it. And ultimately that prevented me from realizing the strategy that I wanted to go down. So I realized that historic properties, not my forte, and that I needed to stick with multifamily.
Right, right. Yeah, that takes a special skill set to really just, I guess, navigate, especially the historical societies and, you know, the standards they set. That's not something I've ever touched either, just because I don't understand it. It seems like it's a lot of work. So it sounds like you got a firsthand taste of that.
Yes, on the job learning. You keep that education going.
Right, right. Man, that's great. If you look back and you said, hey, these are some keys to my successes and things I've done really right, and it's okay to brag here, but I guess what are some of the things that you look back and say, hey, I've done this consistently and well, and these are things I think other people should emulate?
Well, yeah, the thing that's worked the best for me, and there are multiple schools of thought, and I'd say I'm definitely in the minority on this one, but I focus as narrowly as I possibly can. You know, not only do I just operate in Seattle, I have a fairly narrow geographic focus within Seattle, predominantly multifamily, and my deal size is pretty consistent. It doesn't vary too much either. And I do that so I can limit the number of outside influences and factors that are available. I view those as risks, and as many risks as that I can control, the better and the more confidence I have going into a deal.
Right, right. So narrowing down your geography and sticking to the area that you want to invest in has been one of the keys.
Yeah, for my entire 19 years of investing in real estate, it's all been in Seattle.
Right. Wow. That's cool. That's very cool. There's not a lot of people that come on the show that can say that. You know, some people are all over, myself included, all over the country. And it's like, oh, wait, you know, to really hone in and laser focus is admirable. That's really cool. This has been fantastic. Anything else you want to share with us, you know, before we jump here into the final four, just things that as you kind of rewind the tape, you say, hey, these are things that I really feel like other people could emulate that I've done.
I've also been successful by growing incrementally, right? I haven't subscribed to jumping into something. I view it more as, you know, there's a long sloping beach where the water comes up to, and you take a step and you get a little bit deeper on each deal, and you learn a little bit more, and you take another step and go a little bit deeper. But yeah, I've grown slowly that way, but it has also been allowed me to learn in ways that haven't hurt me too badly.
Right, right. No, I think that's great. That's great, because a lot of us, myself probably included in this, want overnight, get her done, make it happen now. But incremental growth, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Preston, let's jump here into the final four if we can. The first question is, what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Control your variables. Control as many variables and know as much as you can about the deal. So rely on as few outside consultants or advisors as necessary.
Know for yourself versus having others, you know, give you that information and accept it as fact. Does that sound
right? Things like rent reports. What will the rents be in this neighborhood a year from now? It's better if you have that information yourself and you have a good understanding of the area and the market and the neighborhood, rather than getting it from a broker or a consultant.
Gotcha. No, that's great. Question number two is this: when it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
I love this. We could do a whole show about this. If I had to narrow it down to one, I'd put it in sleep category. And within sleep, I'd narrow it down further to I just got a temperature regulating mattress pad and weighted blanket. So you set the temperature to change over the course of the night to mirror your sleep cycle. So it cools off to so you can get into deep sleep, and then it warms up a little bit for your REM cycle.
Really? That's fascinating. I mean, you know, without sleep, what can you do well during the day if you're not sleeping well at night?
Yeah, it's marketed to athletes for performance, but hey, every day is a performance, right? You want to function your best all the time.
Absolutely. I love that. That's probably the most unique answer I've received. But no, that's really good. That's absolutely good. Question number three is this: when it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Oh, I don't know if it makes it a better place, but one thing we've been doing as a company for the past 6 years, we've been having a free apartment contest that we donate. We're up to three apartments this year. We have an essay contest. It's open to larger community, and so we get submissions. And we have a selection committee on our team and read and score the essays, and then have interviews and give out a year's worth of free rent to.
That is cool. So somebody, all they have to do is write an essay.
That's right. Yes.
I mean, is it? I guess can you give us more detail on how this program works? I think people would find this interesting.
There's a tab on our website, wallspropertymanagement.com, that goes into kind of the history of it and some of the media response around it. But essentially the question, it changes slightly every year, but it's something along the lines of, if you didn't have to pay rent for a year, what could you do to improve the community or improve the world? And it's limited to 250 words. So, you know, people have to be relatively brief in going through it. But yeah, there's the successful candidates, or the best candidates, have some combination of a demonstrated history of giving, a need for, you know, why they're prevented from doing more currently, and the future potential to contribute something of significance in the future. And so when those three collide and come together, it makes for some powerful essays.
Wow, that's really cool. That is really cool. Good for you guys. You should be proud of that. I'll have to go to your website and kind of check that out. That's tons of fun. Preston, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Either the property management site, wallspropertymanagement.com, or investor site, wallspropertygroupre.com, or on LinkedIn, Preston Walls.
Awesome. Preston, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.